We're back. Michael Cohen, 1320 WILS. Well, 24-year-old Andrew Thomas, the former MSU medical student, sentenced to 5 years of probation as well as 400 hours of community service this week for killing at least 12 dogs. Scott Heiser is an attorney, and he oversees the criminal justice program for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. It's a California-based group advocating for stronger enforcement of anti-animal cruelty laws. He's joining us now to get some reaction on this interesting sentencing. Scott, thanks for joining us on WILS.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Now, apparently, from what I've read, the prosecutor was hoping to get 2 to 4 years or so, but there's a state law complicating things, and the judge ended up going this probation route. I guess, first of all, the crime itself, how extreme is it compared to others that you've seen in working with the Animal Legal Defense Fund?
Well, this one's remarkable in the number of animals involved over a sustained course of conduct. My understanding is he started ordering these dogs in roughly October, November of 2010, and would order them, kill them, order new ones from breeders, have them shipped in and kill them. And he did this no less than 13 times over the span of 7 months. So, an isolated incident of losing control and injuring an animal, we see that pretty regularly, but it's rare to see an ongoing cycle of this kind of violence time and time again.
Now, Mr. Thomas, he had a clean record. He served 107 days in jail before the sentencing and so on. So when you take those factors, what do you think of the sentence, and what do you think he really deserved?
Well, to be honest with you, somebody with this level of protracted violence over a sustained course of time like that, I think giving him credit for time served, uncuffing him and sending him free out of the courthouse after sentencing was a huge mistake on the part of the judge. It wasn't just the prosecuting attorney's office, mind you, that was asking the court to deviate from the sentencing guidelines and exercise the court's discretion to make the finding of substantial and compelling reasons to increase the sentence, but it was also the probation department, which does a pre-sentence investigation of the underlying facts of the case, the defendant's previous history, lack of criminal history in this case, but also their psychiatric history. And it was the probation officer who was encouraging the court to exercise her discretion to go up under the guidelines and give this defendant more time than was called for, which was the presumptive guidelines in Michigan for this crime was 0 to 9 months in prison.
Do you think that generally harsher sentences really act as a deterrent to these kinds of cruelty crimes against animals?
It depends. It really does depend on the type of cruelty. For the narcissistic animal hoarder types, I don't think that they're dissuaded by anything, but you also need to just pull them off the street. But for violent offenders, I'm a little bit less concerned about deterrence and a little bit more focused on overall safety of the community and using the penal system to instill some basic social skills and some cognitive skills so that these guys don't reoffend. And so taking somebody like Thompson out of the system, putting him in the Department of Corrections, and making the community safe while he's getting dealt with in the Department of Corrections so that he doesn't reoffend is the proper course. I think somebody that's this violent, and the statistics show, and there are tons of studies on this, that guys like Mr. Thompson are at least 5 times more likely to commit a violent act against a human being. Guys like that, we shouldn't be doing sort of a social experiment to see how treatment goes in the community with somebody like that. We need to take them out of the game for a while and protect ourselves.
In general, though, do U.S. courts, do you think they look at crimes against animals, killing animals, abusing animals? Do they maybe take a much lighter approach to that than maybe they should, because they are ultimately not humans?
Well, that's been sort of the common default thinking for many decades in this country, but the tide has begun to turn, at least in some jurisdictions, over the last 15 years or so, where we've seen sort of that default institutional bias against animal cruelty cases that existed quite prevalently 15, 20 years ago, starting to erode away as more of these judges who carry that mindset, and prosecutors as well for that matter, that carry that mindset into the judicial system have retired and handed over the reins to the younger crews who have a much stronger appreciation for the fact that animal cruelty is a very serious crime, not just against the animals, but also against the families involved and society generally.
Now, you served as a prosecutor for 17 years, and you've prosecuted many animal cruelty cases yourself. I mean, how difficult is it to convict somebody unless they, of course, confess when you're dealing with these animal cruelty issues? Obviously, the victim can't talk, can't tell you what happened. How do you go about it, and how often are you simply not able to convict someone?
Well, you make a good point. In cases where you don't have a confession, you're dealing with a nonverbal victim, so you've got to deal with other witnesses who observe the conduct, or forensics and access to the victim on the part of the defendant, and you're building a circumstantial case. I correlate animal cruelty cases oftentimes to child abuse cases involving kids that aren't verbal yet, and they're tough to prove sometimes. They can be very tough to prove, but they're viable cases, and you can make a good case with a good quality investigation. And oftentimes, law enforcement, for a variety of reasons, fails to do that. You know, I've seen cases where animals have been killed at the hands of their abuser, and instead of seizing the body, refrigerating it, and taking it in for a necropsy, the law enforcement officer just throws the body into the trash and goes to the next call.
Wow. Tell me, what percentage would you say of those who are victimizing these animals are, like Mr. Thompson, coming into the system with an absolutely clean record and have never exhibited any kind of violent behavior towards anyone before?
That's a really interesting question. I don't have any hard stats on that I can cite from a formal study, but anecdotally, just from my experience, when you break down animal cruelty cases into categories and you carve out just this section of the discrete affirmative acts of cruelty inflicted by a defendant on animals owned by the defendant, when you're looking at that segment of the population, it's not that common to have somebody come in on a first-time offender. It really isn't that rare. A lot of times you'll see a DV case or a domestic violence case come in on an animal cruelty angle first, because that's where somebody in the family who's been the victim of abuse themselves is comfortable saying, well, wait a minute, he's abusing my dog, I'm going to report that.
Well, it's certainly a shocking case here in Lansing, but I guess at this point the court will be monitoring Mr. Thompson. Hopefully that is the end of that. But Scott Heiser is the attorney who oversees the criminal justice program for the Animal Legal Defense Fund. Scott, thank you very much for joining us this evening on WILS.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We'll be right back to wrap things up. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.